We come this evening to the third of our five faithful sayings of the Apostle Paul that we find in the pastoral epistles of Timothy and Titus. And our text is found in 1 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 9. This is a faithful saying and worthy of all acceptation. Now, of course, we can't limit our text to verse 9. It immediately raises a question. What is a faithful saying worthy of all acceptation? And it's here we see a different order to the previous sayings. For example, chapter 1, verse 15, chapter 3, verse 1, we find this introductory statement, this is a faithful saying, and then we were told what the faithful saying was. But here in chapter 4, verse 9, it doesn't refer to what comes next so much as what has come before. And that is what we find especially in verse 7 and verse 8, but we could embrace also verse 6, where Paul writes, "If thou put the brethren in remembrance of these things, thou shalt be a good minister of Jesus Christ, nourished up in the words of faith and of good doctrine, whereunto thou hast attained. But refuse profane and old wives' fables, and exercise thyself rather unto godliness. For bodily exercise profiteth little, but godliness is profitable unto all things, having promise of this life, that the life that now is, and of that which is to come. This is a faithful saying and worthy of all acceptation." That we ought to exercise ourselves unto godliness. We're to do so because it carries the promise not only of benefit for this life, but also in the life to come. And so Paul is here stressing what we could say is the importance of spiritual dedication. Now the context here is Timothy writing, or Paul writing to Timothy, who's a young minister, and he wants to impress upon Timothy's heart certain goals for his ministry and how he is to attain them. And there are three pairs of statements or truths that we find here from verse 6 and following in chapter 4, where Paul states something that is to be avoided, and then he backs it up with something that is to be followed. For example, the first is found in verse 7, "But refuse profane and old wives' fables." Don't be distracted with myths. People are going to come to you with all things that sound really spiritual, but don't get taken up with these things. Rather, focus upon the truth of God and exercise yourself unto godliness. That's the first pair. Then the second pair we find in verse 12 and following, where Paul says, "Let no man despise thy youth." Timothy was a young man. You can almost imagine people sitting there saying, "What does that young man know? I'm much older than him. I know more of the Bible. I have more life experience." Paul says, "Don't let your youth be a discouragement to you. Rather, as a young man, live so as to be an example of godliness unto the people." The third thing is found in verse 14, where he says, "Don't neglect the gift that is in thee." He's referring to his preaching gift. Make sure you don't neglect this. God has given this to you. The church has recognized it, and the presbytery has ordained you to this office. Don't neglect it. Don't let it go to waste. But rather, meditate upon the truth. Take heed to yourself and the doctrine, and continue in all of these things. Timothy, that's the way you'll not only save yourself, but you'll be a means of salvation to all that hear you. So that's the context, this whole idea of goals for the ministry and how to attain them. And our faithful saying has to do with the first of these three pairs. It's very clearly, in the first place, applicable unto ministers of the gospel. Paul says to ministers, whatever you do, make sure you exercise yourself unto godliness. But it's also equally as applicable to members of the congregation. So that God is saying to all of us tonight, whether we are ministers or elders or members, exercise yourself unto godliness. Now, if you want a little bit of homework and you have access to the works of Thomas Boston, you'll find in volume 4 that Thomas Boston has 2 sermons on this passage. And the one is directed to ministers. And the next one is directed to members. How ministers must make exercise unto godliness a priority. How Christians likewise must do the same. So then, spiritual dedication, exercising ourselves unto godliness. I want you to notice, first of all, the contrast. Paul takes us into the gym. That's a word you're very much familiar with, but I wonder, did you know that every time you use the word gym, you're really using the Greek word. The Greek word that's found here explicitly in verse 8. For bodily exercise profiteth little, but godliness is profitable unto all things. That word exercise is the Greek word gymnasia. The same word is found in the previous verse, 7, but it's there found as a verb, a command, where he says, exercise thyself rather unto godliness. Do your gymnasia. In verse 8 he refers to exercise or gymnasia. So what he's doing here in these verses is he's commanding that we exercise ourselves unto godliness, but then he compares that or contrasts it with physical or bodily exercise. And the first part of the contrast is there in verse 8 at the beginning of the verse. For bodily exercise profiteth a little. Now, Paul is writing to the church in Ephesus, and the church in Ephesus is predominated by Greek culture. And there are many things that we could say about that culture. It's paganism, it's philosophy, but one thing that they are like us in today is that they loved sport. Indeed, they gave to us the Olympic Games. And so the congregation to which he's writing knows what he's writing about. They would immediately have thought of young men training in the gymnasia. Men, likewise, disciplining themselves. That they might push themselves physically to be the best that they could be. And then they would line up in their stadia, another Greek word. And they would race in order to win the prize. Or they might wrestle and fight to win the prize. Well, as I mentioned, it's a culture very much like ours. If anything, we might say ours is even more enthusiastic about sports. We live in the age and era of professional sports, where individuals dedicate the whole of their lives to one end, that they might pursue excellence. And you can think of the rewards that are set before them now, financial rewards. You think of the footballers, or footballers in the Premier League, and many of them are being paid £200,000 per week. And then China is trying to promote football over there, and they're enticing these European footballers to go over to China, offering them £615,000 a week. I recently heard even £800,000 per week to go and play football. Or last year we had the Olympics, and men devote themselves to train so that they might stand upon the podium with a gold medal around their neck. Or maybe you heard of the New Year's Honours List. Have you noticed that increasingly, it seems to me anyway, that sportsmen seem to be our new knights? It used to be that you went across and you did a wonderful act of valour, maybe fighting the French or something. But now you ride a bike around a track, or you hit a little tennis ball over a net, and you are Sir Andrew Murray or Sir Chris Hoy. They're our new heroes. Sports culture. Well, you don't need to be an Olympic athlete or a professional footballer. Most of us will never attain unto these heights, but still bodily exercise is seen as important, isn't it? We all know it has rewards. You only have to go down into the GP surgery, and very likely up on the board, they're going to be saying something to encourage you to become active. Government incentives and initiatives. It's why you see joggers on the road. It's why you get frustrated when you're driving along the road and you come behind a group of cyclists. Oh, they're never going to win a gold medal in the Olympics, but they want to practice. They want to train their bodies. They want to get healthy. They want to burn fat. And Paul says here, yes, that's a good thing. Bodily exercise, he doesn't dismiss it. He doesn't say that's terribly worldly. He says, no, bodily exercise does have profit. However, you need to keep it in perspective. The profit of physical exercise is little. It is in a limited sphere, and more than likely it's going to be for a limited time. So think of our professional footballers. I never really thought about it when I was younger, but now you see people and they come to the age of 35 and all you hear in the newspaper is they're done, they're over the hill. And you're 40 now looking back thinking, well, 35 doesn't seem to be that old. In any other realm of employment, 35 is when somebody's beginning to move up the ladder and develop, but a footballer, he's done. It's over. Or even those of us who give ourselves to exercise, we're always fighting the onset and progress of old age, aren't we? So whether it's a sportsman whose career terminates in their 30s, or whether it's anybody who simply tries to keep fit, it's all limited. Keep things in perspective. Therefore, there is more to life than physical health. There is more to life than participation in exercising and sport. And there is more to life than spectating sport. Mr. Miller said to me this morning that he happened to notice yesterday on the TV, Old Trafford, Manchester. Two banners. Number one, MUFC, the religion. Another one, Manchester is my heaven. Well, Paul cuts across that kind of nonsense and he says, wise up. Oh, there's profit in sport. There's profit in physical exercise. But keep it in perspective. The profit is so little. So little compared with the other half of the contrast. Bodily exercise and its reward at the beginning of verse 8. Then spiritual exercise and its reward as verse 8 continues. But godliness is profitable unto all things. Having promise of the life that now is and of that which is to come. Now do you get the contrast? Bodily exercise has profit in some things. There is a measure of good in it. But spiritual exercise is profitable for everything because it has our highest good in it. So I ask you then this evening, what is most important? The answer is obvious. Spiritual exercise. Second question, what do you prioritize in your life? Oh, we can get so enthusiastic about physical exercise. I need to train. I need to do my exercise regime. I need to pump my iron. Do we think in the same way about giving ourselves to spiritual exercise? Paul says one promises reward in this life only. You might get a medal around your neck. You may have a temporary health benefit for a time. But the career is going to come to an end and life is going to come to an end. But spiritual exercise promises rewards now and forever. In fact, spiritual exercise promises life in its fullness. Not life in part, physical life and enjoyment of health, but life in its fullness. Consider then that godly exercise has an eternal reward. This isn't the only place that Paul uses an athletic image. You can think of Philippians chapter 3. I forget those things which are behind, and I press towards the mark for the prize of the high calling of God in Christ Jesus. There he is, straining every fibre of his soul in order that he might win the race that Christ has called him to run. Or another example, if you can turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 9, you'll see how Paul again uses the athletic image, and he contrasts the eternal reward against the earthly temporal reward. 1 Corinthians chapter 9 and verse 24 to 25. Know ye not that they which run in a race run all, but one receiveth the prize? So run that ye may obtain. And every man that striveth for the mastery is temperate in all things. He's talking about how disciplined somebody is in order to attain to success in a race or a sport. He's temperate. He's disciplined. Now they do it to obtain a what? A corruptible crown. But we do it to obtain what? An incorruptible crown. So there was the victor on the podium in the Greek games, and he would have been given a laurel wreath. And the laurel wreath was made of leaves that would have lasted longer than most leaves. But in the end, Paul says, it's going to wither away, isn't it? But what do we discipline ourselves to? What's the end of godliness? He says it's not for a withering wreath, it's for an incorruptible crown. And what's it going to profit us if we were to gain, I don't know, how many Olympic gold medals, how many Premiership League awards, how many goals in the Champions League? What's it going to profit us if we don't attain to this? Or we might have trophy room and a display cabinet, or if we want to bring it down to our mediocre level, we might have a little bit bigger biceps than we did have last year. But physical fitness, ignoring this, is a wasted life. Do you get that? Physical fitness, ignoring this, is a wasted life. Spiritual exercise has an eternal reward, but spiritual exercise also has a temporal reward. Paul isn't saying that one has the promise of this life, whereas the other has the promise of the life to come. He doesn't say that. Look again at verse 8. But godliness is profitable unto all things, having promise of the life that now is, and of that which is to come. Spiritual exercise has promise, more profit, if you might say, for life now than physical exercise. He says it's profitable unto all things. Men talk about the good life, and they're always in search of the good life. What is it? Is it having your own private yacht and retiring early and cruising around the Mediterranean? Well, for some they think it is. Other people are always talking about quality of life. It's not about having so much money, it's about quality time and quality this and quality that. Quality of life. The Bible tells us that Christ, through the gospel, gives us life of supreme quality. Here's how he puts it in John chapter 17, verse 3. This is life eternal. You think he's going to talk about ongoing life with induration? But he doesn't. He says, this is life eternal, that they might know thee, the only true God, and Jesus Christ, whom thou hast sent. That is quality of life. In another place, he talks about those who come to break in and destroy. But I am come, he says, that they might have life, and that they might have it more abundantly. The exceeding abundance and fullness of life, where is it to be found? In Jesus Christ. Sought and pursued and enjoyed by the exercise of our soul unto godliness. So do you see the contrast? Physical exercise and its reward, and spiritual exercise and reward. There's really no comparison between the two. Well then, in the second place, we have not the contrast, but the command. Because Paul introduces this contrast in verse 8 to support the command he gives in verse 7. But refuse profane and old wives' fables, and exercise thyself rather unto godliness. That's the command. Then the backup, for bodily exercise profiteth little, and so on. So as we've opened up that contrast, I ask you, do you believe it? Do you believe what Paul is saying here? The superiority of spiritual exercise. I trust you say, yes, I believe it. Well then, God says, exercise yourself unto godliness. Devotion to God and Christ-like holiness is the command. Well, how are we going to do it? We want to be practical. How are we going to exercise ourselves unto godliness? I want to think of three things. First of all, the equipment involved. If you're going to exercise yourself unto godliness, you need to understand that there is equipment involved. If I were to take you down to the Citadel Leisure Centre, and you were to go to the gym there, the first thing the man would ask you is, are you a member? You'd say no. Well, you have to do an initiation. And he would say, I'm going to show you what all of these machines are. I'm going to tell you what all of these machines do. And then you would come back another day and he might advise you as to what program of fitness you should do to meet your ends. He would say, this is what it is. This is how it works. This is how many reps you're to do. This is how frequently you're to do it. And he might even give you some information about diet. He says, there's no point coming in here and running on the treadmill and going home and eating pork pies. There's no point coming in here and pushing iron and not eating enough protein for muscle growth. He'd give you all of this advice. Well, Paul does that to Timothy here in this very passage. Exercise thyself unto godliness. He tells him, Timothy, there are certain things you need to avoid. And there are certain things you need to observe. For example, verse 7. Refuse profane and old wives' fables, and exercise thyself rather unto godliness. Timothy, don't get distracted. Study the truth. Understand the truth. When people come to you and talk about all kinds of supposedly holy things, like earlier on in the chapter, speaking lies and hypocrisy, forbidding to marry and abstain from meats, he says, Timothy, dismiss it all. Forget about it. This ultra-ascetic stuff, this ultra-spiritual stuff, cast it aside. It's going to hinder you. You have to avoid certain things. Well, you can learn from that yourself. You need to understand what you are to avoid as a Christian if you're to exercise yourself unto godliness. But then there are things to observe. For example, verse 6. If thou put the brethren in remembrance of these things, thou shalt be a good minister of Jesus Christ, nourished up in the words of faith and of good doctrine. whereunto thou hast attained. And then again, verse 8, godliness is profitable unto all things. Doctrine and devotion. Use the word, Timothy. Study the Bible, Timothy. The same thing applies to us. We could add to it all of the tools that God in His providence has made available to us. Get good books and read them. Be consistent in Bible reading. You have Bibles in your house and you've got to pick them up. Download things from the internet. Listen to them when you travel. Devote yourself to Bible reading, doctrinal study, fellowship with the believers, building one another up in the truth. Men have a terrible tendency to want to forget these things. Doctrine? Do you seriously mean I have to read doctrine? It would shock you to give books to people today in the broad evangelical church. I fall foul of this all the time. I go with a book and say, maybe you might benefit from this book. Or you try to share a particular truth with people and they can give you the book back and say, I don't understand that book. It's too deep. It's about half an inch deep, but it's too deep. They say, well, you know, I want to be holy. I want to serve God. Just give me practical things. That's what I need, practical things. Paul says, Timothy, in this exercise unto godliness, you need to devote yourself to the doctrine of God's word. Do you know what it's like? It's like these things you see advertised all the time. You know, you want to lose weight. Well, you have to discipline yourself as to what you eat. And you may have to discipline yourself as to what you do. Get out walking or running. But you turn the TV on or you look in the newspaper and somebody's selling you the next great thing. You know, put this belt on and it's got electrical impulses. And you don't have to do anything. It's just going to burn the fat away all on its own. That's how some people want to do holiness. That's how they want to do their exercise unto godliness. Just give me some little practical thing and that will do the business that I need. Paul says, no, this is hard work. Like he takes us into the gym and he says, you see this piece of equipment, the Bible, you've got to use it. You see this piece of equipment, doctrinal books, you've got to use them. Devotion to these things. Here's an area for Christian fellowship. You've got to use it. The church is like the gym and all these aspects of church life are the equipment that God has given to us to exercise unto godliness. There's equipment involved. But then there's also effort required. Godliness, just like physical fitness, is not going to just happen by accident. It's not going to be achieved without effort. It calls for discipline in the ongoing course of spiritual training. Now you say to me, I want to get fit. And I might say to you, well, join the gym. What do I mean by that? Do I mean by joining the gym you're going to get fit? No, there's something assumed in it. The assumption is that when you join the gym, you actually go to it. So many people, they have this flash idea. I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to buy an exercise bike. Have you done it? I think we've all done it. I'm going to buy this piece of equipment. This is the thing. Treadmill. Exercise bike. Just go on Gumtree. Just go on Gumtree. And see how many people are selling the things. Used only twice. I had this great idea one time. I bought the thing and I never used it. Because what they realized is that buying it, they had to discipline themselves and they needed to put effort in. Brethren, that is why there are so many spiritually unfit Christians. because we don't want the discipline of exercising ourselves unto godliness. We realize that we're not very spiritually fit. And then we try to do something about it. The impulsive short burst. I know I'm going to go to the gym, and we walk into the gym, we've got all the equipment, and we get onto the weights bench and we put it 50 kilograms or 70 kilograms and we try to do one bench press and we think, "Ooh, I can't do this." And then we give up. Well, there's effort required. Let's think about that as it pertains to the study of the Word of God and theology. You need to read the Scriptures. You should read good books. And you need zeal, but you also need realism. That guy who goes into the gym for the first time and he cranks up the weights. He doesn't want to look like a weakling, you know. And he cranks up the weights and he pushes one or two reps out and strains a muscle. And then he gives up. We can do that when it comes to Bible reading and theological study. But what maybe we need to understand is where we are. And so we approach this subject with zeal. I want to become more spiritually healthy. I need to invest with effort, but I also need to start where I'm at. Some people think, I know what I'm going to do. I need to read more of the Bible. I'm going to read four chapters a day. They do it for a week and then they give up. Well, how about one chapter a day? How about one chapter a day? Start there. Or some people hear me talking about reading theological books. You might pick one up off the shelf and you begin to read it and you think, what language is this in? I don't even understand these terms. Okay, start at a lower level, but don't stay there. That guy who goes into the gym and he cranks it to 50 or 70 kilos first go, he'd be better off starting at 20, 25, and next week 30, and the next week 35, and progress incrementally and get stronger as he goes. That's the way it has to happen. When I was converted, the first thing my minister said was, get a shorter catechism. I got the shorter catechism, finished that. Then he gave me A.A. Hodge on the Confession of Faith. He says, go and read that. And I read that. I came back and then he gave me Louis Burkhoff's Systematic Theology. What was he doing? He was training me, understanding that he needed to start a level and bring it along incrementally. That's what you've got to do in your life. Some of you are going to be able to lift heavier theological weights than others. But wherever we are, each one of us should be constantly training and pushing ourselves through that plateau, if you like, not just to gain knowledge in our heads, but to grow in godliness and in true piety. We could say the same for prayer. We all want to pray better. Do you imagine that we are going to pray more effectively if we don't actually train and discipline ourselves in prayer? Again, we set the bar too high. This time it's like going into the gym. And there's the treadmill. You think everybody's watching me and there's mirrors everywhere. Well, you know, well, I better put it on for 20 minutes or 25 minutes and off you go, and 5 minutes into it you're red faced and you're gasping, you're busted. Well, you'd have been better starting maybe at 6 minutes and then 10 minutes and then 12 minutes and then 15 minutes. That's the way we do things physically. Why do we think we're just going to be able to jump in and suddenly devote ourselves to 30 minutes or an hour of prayer if it's not something that we've been accustomed to in our lives? We get discouraged. I'm no use. I can't run. We give up. Brethren, we need to exercise ourselves in these things. We need to grow and develop. The more we give ourselves to prayer, the more we'll love prayer, the more we will be strengthened to pray. And what about good works and fellowship? Again, we have these crisis points in our Christian experience, and we think, I'm not doing anything. I ought to be serving here. Or we think, I haven't been giving myself to Christian fellowship for a while. So we jump 2 feet into some big enterprise. And it overwhelms us. And we think, I find it so hard. I can't do it. Do you find that with fellowship? Maybe you ladies, you decide, well, we need to meet up because we know Christian fellowship is so important. And so you meet up and you try to talk. And it's difficult. Maybe you've never talked in that way before. And you go your separate ways, and maybe you say to your husbands after, well, you know, it was just so difficult. And that's the end of it. Do you ever think about exercising in these things? Men as well. Exercising these things. So you have people round to the house and you begin to broach things that you know you should be talking about, and it's a bit stagnant and stiff. Well, do it again next month or next week and try to develop this whole art, if you like, of Christian fellowship. The equipment involved, the effort required, finally the end in view. Let's think of our Olympic athlete again. He trained with an end in view. Maybe he had it in his mind from a child. Sir Bradley Wiggins. As a young man, he had a goal in his mind of where he wanted to go with his cycling. Well, he kept that goal ahead of him. Or what about the jogger who simply runs around the road? He has a goal, doesn't he? Or he should have. Maybe his goal is much more ordinary. I want to maintain fitness. I don't want to go up to a 36-inch waist from a 34-inch waist. Or I want to come down. But he has a goal. You have goals with your physical fitness. I have been very encouraged recently in our own household that our children have taken this enthusiastic devotion to training. Up they go to the attic. Alethea and even Micah are up there doing these wee exercise routines. Big brothers have started it. What's their goal? Well, somebody wants to get into the higher hockey team. Maybe he also wants to be able to beat dad in a wrestling match, but that's not going to happen. But he has it as a goal. He's working towards something. Without an end or a goal, guess what? You stop. You stop when it gets difficult. That's why you have all these things on Gumtree. Come by my treadmill or my exercise bike or my weights bench. It got too difficult, the discipline, and the dust just began to settle on the whole enterprise. Well, it's the same in spiritual exercise. You need to have a goal before you. And is there a higher goal in the whole of life than what Paul says here, that exercise unto godliness is profitable unto everything? Because not only does it have a promise of this life, that we can grow in holiness and we can develop in communion and knowledge of Christ, but it has the promise of the life to come. Jesus says, you store up your treasures here and the thief can steal it and the rust can corrupt it. But if you store your treasure in heaven, you will never lose it. Well, Paul's saying something similar here. He says, godly exercise has gains that we will never lose eternally. you stop training for a week or two and you go back and try to do the same number of pull-ups or press-ups and you'll feel the difference. Ah, but these gains that we get eternally, they're gains that we will never, ever lose. It has the greatest profit, and it sets before us the highest goal. So then, Paul says to Timothy, this is the faithful saying and worthy of all acceptation. You're mad if you don't accept this truth. That while bodily exercise has a little profit, exercise to godliness is profitable in everything. Let us press towards the mark then, brethren, for the prize of the high calling of God in Christ. We stand for prayer.